Samuel Vimes dreamed about clues. He had a jaundiced view of clues. He instinctively distrusted them. They got in the way. And he distrusted the kind of person who'd take one look at another man and say in a lordly voice to his companion, "Ah, my dear sir, I can tell you nothing except that he is a left-handed stonemason who has spent some years in the merchant navy and has recently fallen on hard times." And then unroll a lot of supercilious commentary about calluses and stance and the state of a man's boots, when exactly the same comments could apply to a man who was wearing his old clothes because he'd been doing a spot of home bricklaying for a new barbecue pit and had been tattooed once when he was drunk and 17. These terms are often synonymous. And in fact got seasick on a wet pavement. What arrogance. What an insult to the rich and chaotic variety of the human experience. It was the same with more static evidence. The footprints in the flowerbed were probably, in the real world, left by the window cleaner. The scream in the night was quite likely a man getting out of bed and stepping sharply on an upturned hairbrush. The real world was far too real to leave neat little hints. It was full of too many things. It wasn't by eliminating the impossible that you got at the truth, however improbable. It was by the much harder process of eliminating the possibilities. You worked away, patiently asking questions and looking hard at things. You walked and talked, and in your heart you just hoped like hell that some bugger's nerve would crack and he'd give himself up. The events of the day clanged together in Vimes's head. Golems tramped like sad shadows. Father Tubalcheck waved at him, and then his head exploded, showering Vimes in words. Mr. Hopkinson lay dead in his own oven, a slice of dwarf bread in his mouth. And the golems marched on silently. There was Dorful, dragging its foot, its head open for the words to fly in and out of, like a swarm of bees. And in the middle of it all, Arsenic danced, a spiky little green man, crackling and gibbering. At one point he thought one of the golems screamed. After that, the dream faded a bit at a time. Golems, oven, words, priest, Dorful, golems marching, the thudding of their feet making the whole dream pulsate. Vimes opened his eyes. Beside him, Lady Sybil said, and turned over. Someone was hammering at the front door. Still muzzy, head swimming, Vimes pulled himself up on his elbows and said to the nighttime world in general, "What sort of a time do you call this?" "Bingley, bingley, beep," said a cheerful voice from the direction of Vimes's dressing table. "Oh, please. 5:29 a.m. A penny saved is a penny earned. Would you like me to present your schedule for today? While I am doing this, why not take some time to fill out your registration card?" "What? What? What are you talking about?" The knocking continued. Vimes fell out of bed and groped in the dark for the matches. He finally got a candle alight and half ran, half staggered down the long stairs and into the hall. The knocker turned out to be Constable Visit.
"It's Lord Vetinari, sir. It's worse this time."
"Has anyone sent for Donut Jimmy?"
"Yes, sir."
At this time of day, the fog was fighting a rearguard action against the dawn and made the whole world look as though it were inside a ping-pong ball.
"I poked my head in as soon as I came on shift, and he was out like a light, sir."
"How did you know he wasn't asleep?"
"On the floor, sir, with all his clothes on."
A couple of watchmen had put the patrician on his bed by the time Vimes arrived, slightly out of breath and with his knees aching. "Gods," he thought, as he struggled up the stairs, "it's not like the old truncheon and bell days. You wouldn't think twice about running halfway across the city, coppers and criminals locked in hot pursuit." With a mixture of pride and shame, he added, "and none of the buggers ever caught me either." The patrician was still breathing, but his face was waxy and he looked as though death might be an improvement. Vimes's gaze roamed the room. There was a familiar haze in the air. "Who opened the window?" he demanded.
"I did, sir," said Visit, "just before I went to get you. He looked as though he needed some fresh air."
"It'd be fresher if you left the window shut," said Vimes. "Okay, I want everyone, I mean everyone, who was in this place overnight, rounded up and down in the hall in 2 minutes. And someone fetch Corporal Littlebottom, and tell Captain Carrot." "I'm worried and confused," he thought, "so the first rule in the book is to spread it around." He prowled around the room. It didn't take much intelligence to see that Vetinari had got up and moved over to his writing desk, where by the look of it he had worked for some time. The candle had burned right down. An inkwell had been overturned, presumably when he'd slipped off the chair. Vimes dipped a finger in the ink and sniffed it. Then he reached for the quill pen beside it, hesitated, took out his dagger and lifted the long feather gingerly. There seemed to be no cunning little barbs on it, but he put it carefully on one side,
for Littlebottom to examine later. He glanced down at the paper Vetinari had been working on. To his surprise,